Welcome to the Batuta Advocate radio show, recording live from Melbourne. We're hungover, that's true. We're at the comedy festival last night, weren't we, Wendell?
Yeah, we were. A lot of laughs, but it has taken its toll.
Three live comedy shows back to back I watched last night. That was a big shift.
Give us a highlight from one of them.
Sam Campbell, really, really, when you get to the back end of his show, when he's kind of conditioned the audience to his way of thinking, which is not normal, is really funny. It's hard to pull off absurdist comedy on stage, but he does this thing where he just warms everyone up to it, and there's Easter eggs the whole way through. At least there's like nods all the way through. It's all very incremental and planned, and then it's absolutely absurd and crazy, but you're there with him.
Fast and high-paced. You don't get a break. Yeah. It is like stream of consciousness, and it's rolling and rolling and rolling. And when you go to the 10:45 show, after indulging in Melbourne culture, where you guys have big beers, you know, we only have the little ones, the little schooners. So if you've enjoyed a couple of those and then you're into Sam Campbell at 10:45, you feel a little overwhelmed, but you're laughing along and that's all good. And then you spew out and things are open after midnight, which is always weird.
Well, that's dangerous.
Very refreshing, hey?
Strange.
It is. Now, there's two other people in this room here in Melbourne. That we thought we'd interview while we were down here. You might have heard them already throughout this interview because we haven't introduced them yet, but we've been conversing with them. Thank you for joining us. There's a level of anonymity involved in today's guests. What I will say is, in this day and age where, you know, some people might be losing faith in our legacy media brands, these people certainly aren't helping.
Thanks.
They are anti-media. They go by the name of Toilet Paper Australia, and it is their job to point out what is in fact toilet paper.
Exactly.
Or
what
is what you wouldn't even use as toilet paper.
That's probably a good way to put it, I reckon. Yeah. So, yeah, that's us, Toilet Paper Australia.
Media watch, but slightly more militant.
I'd probably say so.
Yes.
Yeah.
And fired up in the comment sections of a lot of different things. People who engage with our Instagram may have seen plenty of comments from Toilet Paper Australia.
Yep.
And you're all over the internet getting into it with people, having arguments.
Yeah, absolutely. We are. If you're on the Batuta Advocate, you would have seen us in the comment sections.
I think your favourite explanation to use is if it was a Venn diagram of Batuta's following versus Toilet Paper Australia's following, I think all toilet paper is inside of Batuta.
Yeah, we're a smaller circle within the big circle of Batuta, I reckon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting because you are very Victorian-centric.
We are, yes.
And there's not many people that have the opportunity to describe themselves as this. Would you describe yourselves as a pandemic success story?
Oh, actually, I would say so. Yeah,
it kind of aligns, doesn't it? Because this is where I like the parallels between Batuta and toilet paper is because Admin One here, he started off with a lot of these fake quotes throughout the start of the pandemic where there's a lot of nonsense talking turned into viral hits.
Yeah, well, basically how the page started was quite literally in the pandemic. So
everyone's a bit information starved. Everyone wants to know what's going on in the pandemic.
Yeah, exactly right.
And you're in Melbourne. We're not using your real names because of what you represent and people would be trying to background
unlike
you.
Unlike us, we use our real names.
Yes.
You guys are Admin One.
Well,
Admin
they're a bit more hardcore than us, so they don't use their real names. But you started up, I guess, in the pandemic in Melbourne, particularly Melbourne, who was copping it the worst out of everywhere in the country.
So I've heard.
I'm looking at 300 days here,
You can see the little twitch, even when you just say it to them.
Oh, yeah.
They're trying to pretend like, you know.
Yeah, my shoulders just tense up a little. Like,
out of an abundance of caution. Ooh.
Yeah, the comedy festival's great for you guys. You really need to lay your hair down. But yeah, so that was when it kind of pops off.
Yeah, so I was kind of just both bored in lockdown, as everyone was, but also just kind of, you know, not happy with the way that legacy media was portraying what was really a public health measure and, you know, having a lot of people that I know work in healthcare and myself in healthcare as well. Like, it's one of those things where I was just like, I just want to vent in a way that's just anonymous, but also people can, like, I'm not in politics myself. Yeah. But, you know, when I say something, it's not through a political lens. Yeah. I phrase it in a way that a politician or someone in politics would not phrase it in. Yeah. So it started off literally just making fake quotes of Scott Morrison saying pee is stored in the balls or some shit like that.
Yeah.
Something dumb like that. Or I remember the first meme I put up was literally, do you know about Turning Point USA and that right-wing lobby group?
Yeah.
So they've got a parody page called Toilet Paper USA.
Yeah, right.
Then there was an Australian chapter of that that was launched and I was like, fuck it, make Toilet Paper Australia, which is where the logo came from and everything. And they always make like these inspirational quotes from conservatives. And I was like, dear lefties, like it was just a quote of Scott, fake quote of Scott Morrison. Dear lefties, how can I be so full of shit when I clearly shat myself in 1997? And it just kind of went from there.
The room of the one die.
And then, yeah, it went from like, it gradually sort of transitioned into like memes and shit posting and that sort of stuff into, you know, think pieces and now a podcast. And it's really kind of snowballed in a way that's happened so gradually that I look back and I'm like, I didn't expect this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think maybe that's a result of there being a need for something like what you're doing?
I think so. I think people are not happy with the way that the media is so openly biased, and we are. We are openly biased in terms of, you know, we're progressive people.
Did you struggle with the idea of what you represent being a correction, or are you trying to run a balanced narrative?
I think it's a correction, definitely. I'd like to think that we're open about this, that we are so unashamedly, you know, supportive of a certain, you know, facets of politics, whereas I find the media to be so much more insidious because they kind of like to brand themselves as neutral and as, you know, unbiased. And it's like when you, how does the Herald Sun for the last 8 elections consecutively say that the Liberal Party, through independent analysis, is better on the balance of things? Yeah. You can't say they're unbiased.
Do you find they even move the dial as much anymore? Like particularly in Victoria, right? The media. Yeah. Can influence narratives. For example, youth crime, if that's a rampant issue, it can be the media that decides it's African kids. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And there's those little things, but politically, they just don't seem to have the influence. If they couldn't get rid of Dan Andrews, and they tried so hard.
Yeah. Like, and I think that's the thing, because Dan was so savvy in terms of getting around them. And but he was also like so, in a way, hostile to them.
Yeah.
And he stopped
advertising.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, because
money through News Corp.
I think a lot of, and this is something that a lot of like Labor parties elsewhere have not done so well, is kind of be like, well, they kind of go to the media, well, can you please like me?
Yeah.
They're never going to. And I think Dan realized that and was just like, well, fuck you, I'm going to go do my own thing. Yeah. So
I think Dan was really powerful too in taking advantage of using socials. He was very good in the shit posting game. We saw a lot of that. He'd just do a post like, we just gave 5,000 teachers jobs, and they would just get so many reactions. So I think he was lucky to have a time where he didn't need the media as much as people that come before him.
Yeah, and he's kind of like he's actually not too different to Stephen Miles in the fact that he was a nobody until all of a sudden he was in the job.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
I think as well, there are a lot of people in Victoria who are willing to call out the media. So you mentioned African gangs before. Yeah. Like the gangs they were talking about didn't actually exist. Yeah. I remember they-
Apex.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I remember they did like, they literally did like a thing, was like, know your gangs. And they took this photo of this one group. It was literally a British drill group from like Clapton or something like that.
Yeah,
it's like, that's like Skepta. I listen to their music.
He's a Brit Award winner, yeah.
Yeah.
That's where the page comes in, because obviously there's no credibility there.
Yeah.
You've just got it completely wrong and they're just like, oh, well, I think we just talked about it on the pod we recorded. You know, that's just all about sweeping stuff under the rug, onto the next story. Whereas I think TPA is here to say, nah, you've kind of fucked up here. Let's talk about it for a little bit.
And we always joke when there's like, you know, some culture war, when it's like, you know, Redskins got discontinued by Allens or something like that. Okay, which banking CEO just got arrested today?
Yes.
Or which big thing happened that we really need to care about? And every single time, like, I never really say that anything's certain, but 100% of the time when a culture war comes up, something important's happening.
Yeah.
Like you look at Woolies, for example, the whole Australia Day thing and the fucking biscuit tins.
The biscuit tin.
Like you look at it now and like there's an inquiry into price gouging, something that actually affects us that's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Or for example, when it comes to like, there was the whole thing about like drag queens and like story time and all that.
Yeah.
Like at the same time, there's a cost of living crisis happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, there are bigger fish to fry here. No one cares. No one really cares about that sort of stuff.
Well, they can. That's the thing. They can care. Like, people can get hopped up on that. But
oh, yeah.
But it's also something that won't affect them.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just something to get fired up about, and you can engage exactly with someone online, or you can tell your bloody dumb kid over the phone, you know, how it really is, and they don't understand. It just gives people something to kind of latch onto without going, hang on a second, let's have a look at what's happening in the Senate inquiry, what's Benduzzi saying, what's happening
It's an understandable response that the world that you knew and love is changing forever, and people want it to, but also you're kind of being gouged out the ass at Woolworths, and that should probably be something we tackle first, right?
Yeah, but you're right in terms of, like, getting people fired up. It's so easy to say, oh, the immigrants coming to take your jobs, but then talking about the market share of Woolworths and tax evasion from Brad Banducci.
Yeah.
Like, instantly, I know, to the average punter, how entertaining that's going to be in terms, like, it's not at all. Like, there's no appeal to it. Yeah.
It's almost like federally, it's almost like that last Liberal government fucked up so badly that this protection racket had no option but to cover their fuck-ups. You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
They got to the point where they were just like, yeah, we're going to have to start writing about this Christian Porter thing. Like, we're going to have to start.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, it's almost like they're not doing it for clicks. They're not doing it for money. Yeah. Because if you were to follow the public sentiment into clicks, so we know that something about what's a hot button issue that people will always read about? Planes, for example. Aviation shit. People are going to read about that every minute of the day. It's funny and it's in the psyche, you know, being on an airplane. Something happened on a plane today. Everyone's going to read that.
Yeah.
What would have made sense is for the Australian media to, the moment Scott Morrison became public enemy number one was the Hawaii holiday, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. And from that moment, he was a wanker. He was done. It was Scotty from marketing. He was a fuckwit. Like, you could openly talk shit about him in a bowls club anywhere in Australia after that. Mm-hmm. And they still didn't follow the public sentiment, which makes you wonder, what is the point? Like, what are they trying to do here? Because it's like, that's the business model right now. If you want to follow, you know, if you're in the game of populist sensationalized media, you should be jumping on his head right now because the public want you to, and the public will agree with that, and that's, you know.
And it was so obvious, because not only did he, like, go to Hawaii, but, like, they were like, he's in Newcastle.
Yeah.
Like, his staff were like, he's in Australia.
Said it while he wasn't around.
And, like, the fact is he only got caught because Australians there took selfies with him. And everyone's like, wait, fuck, where are you? That's the Prime Minister. Isn't he in Niue? Like, it's just so... And
it's foolish, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where I think if the media bias wasn't visible to you then, and the protection racket wasn't to you then, it is now.
Yeah.
I think the Morrison government kind of pointed out to the media, like, pointed out to everyone what the media is really like.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was like the night before the Victorian election, I think Batuta put out a really good article. It was like, Herald Sun just cuts to the chase and says, vote for the Liberal Party because we like them, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, that was a fucking good one, because it's just like, at that point, it was so unlosable for Labor.
Yeah.
They were just so openly biased against Daniel Andrews. At that point, they were just like, man, we're basically just the media arm. Just vote for them. Like,
there's a funny thing happening in Victoria where you have, like, this sport body politico thing happening. Like, what was the yarn when Dan Andrews announced his resignation?
Yeah.
There was some room full of, like, the Eddie Maguires and all these people. There was some sort of AFL-y kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there was a standing ovation.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a weird thing in Victoria that, like, you've basically got an aristocracy of, like, people involved in football.
Yeah.
It is such a weird thing. Like, they are basically treated like royalty, which I find to be really, really weird, because, like, they always kind of have come from the old money of Australia.
Yeah.
Like, we bring up this example on the page, like, sport is enjoyed by the working people of Australia, but almost everyone who plays AFL, who runs the leagues, who runs the clubs, comes from a private school background.
That's a fairly recent phenomenon.
It is, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Like, I used to be involved in football at, you know, the sort of draft level. And I remember I was doing I was at a Vic Metro versus Vic Country game, and I looked at the team sheets, and they've got, like, the schools and the clubs.
Yeah.
And Vic Metro, of the 48 players in the extended lineup, four of them came from a non-private or Catholic school, which was astonishing.
And AFL levels, right, are, like, well over 50% of coming from the Trinity or the Geelong Grammar Xavier.
They almost all come from the APS.
Yeah, you like to drop a stat, don't you, that it's like a quarter of all AFL players come from six or seven schools?
One in four players across the entire country come from six APS schools, I think it is. Yeah.
So in the last generation, you'd say that those two old boys clubs, you know, the political establishment and the footballing top brass are interwoven.
Oh, 100% yeah. they are. Yeah. yeah. You get a few odd ones out here and there. You get like your odd Ben like Browns.
Eddie McGuire, to be fair, I wouldn't say he's from that private school conveyor belt.
No, he's not.
But he's definitely rubs shoulders, right? He's
Yeah, yeah.
He's managed to get into the room.
Oh, he's managed to get into the room.
He's not leaving.
I mean, there's elements with Eddie McGuire where I think he might be a bigger deal than he presents.
I think so.
You know what I mean? I think he must be some sort of... He must have some sort of business nous or something for people to keep him around. It's not just hot seat. You know what I mean?
Exactly yeah. right. Yeah. yeah. Like some sort of, you know, private investment and that sort yeah. of stuff. But yeah, when it comes to football, that is such an interesting one, especially because when you see the response to any sort of social issue or anything that's going on in football, we talk about this in our pod as well. It's always keep politics out of sport.
Yeah.
And we always argue like, you know, that is an argument that is so, so redundant in every other sport. I mean, sport is inherently political.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali. Yeah. Just that name. Say that name. Like it's a...
Or like, do you think Manchester United and Liverpool is just a debate about fish and chips?
Yeah,
like, no. you know, or Celtic and Rangers is just a sporting debate? Like, these are the most, you know...
1995 Rugby Union World Cup in South Africa? Like, not political. Mandela?
Yeah. yeah, exactly right. Yeah. You know, the protest from apartheid there. Yeah. Like... It is such...
It's funny what people decide is and isn't political because Jimmy Barnes opening an NRL grand final singing K-San, the song about being conscripted and sent to Vietnam and let down by your country, is perfectly fine.
Exactly.
Perfectly fine if it's got a good hook, I guess.
Yeah.
If it's a nice ballad.
But then again, you can't have Macklemore singing Same Love at the...
I know.
The plebiscite grand final.
Did Dutton say that they needed an anti-gay song to combat that?
Yes. That was his. that was his. Him trying to be the moderate, right? He's, Abbott was saying we should ban a pro-gay marriage song from the NRL grand final with the plebiscite coming up, and Dutton came out and said, "No. I'm for free speech, but we must have, as well as a pro-gay marriage, we have to have an anti-gay marriage song." I was like,
"Let's seesaw your gayness.
Where are we going to find them out?"
And that's the thing. Like, is your
rose tattoo?
When it you get to the point so where humorous to see what they would have come up with.
Yeah. Well, when you get to the point like that, where it's like, for balance, we need to have someone be an asshole. It just kind of shows what's wrong with that.
It's the typical thing. Well, we call it on the pager every single International Women's Day. It's like, well, where's Men's Day? Like,
We always
knock it off. Not everything.
November 11.
No, exactly. Everything needs another side, you know? It's just ridiculous.
Every time on TPA, we will always post, happy, but what about International Men's Day Day? It's just, they always
do it.
That's
the first thing that comes up. I want to ask you about a theory that I have, that we have at the Batuta Advocate. Let's go back a couple of years. We had this partnership of Malcolm Turnbull and Kevin Rudd beating a drum for a royal commission into the Murdoch media ownership, right?
Yep.
All of a sudden, that stops.
Yep.
All of a sudden, they start pulling their punches with Albanese.
Mm.
Albanese gets elected, and then Kevin Rudd ends up as a diplomat overseas.
Yeah.
Do you reckon there's been a deal with the devil done there by Albanese?
I wouldn't say that's impossible. It's... As something, in, you know, I
wanted... For the listeners who don't know what I'm trying to say is, the theory is Albanese's gone to Rupert Murdoch and said, can you please stop this assault on me? I know Kevin Rudd and Malcolm Turnbull are a problem for you, and they're getting a lot of momentum, but what if I put one of them in a diplomatic posting where they can't say shit anymore and their job is to, you know, shut the hell up?
Yeah. I guess it's one of those things where it's like, when it comes to the Murdoch press, I mean, with Bill Shorten, they were absolutely relentless and he refused to kiss the ring of Murdoch, more or less. But I guess, I supported the Royal Commission and I'm personally disappointed that it hasn't gone anywhere. I mean, it would be plausible completely that this would have happened. It's one of those things where it's just, you know, again, an example of like what I said before, a Labor government kind of going to the Murdoch press, hey, can you please play nice with us? You know they never will.
Because that's the thing. Mm. Like, sure, they might say that.
Yeah.
You have a deal. Kevin Rudd goes over to fucking America. But then the favors run out by the time you've got a referendum coming up. You know what I mean? And that's And that's where they're going to come in hot to crush you.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what happened.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, they did play a little nicely before that election because the thing that they say, right, about Murdoch is as much as, you know, he fucking hates being wrong. He does want to be seen to be backing a winner. And so he's open to changing kind of allegiances and the coverage of certain things if he feels like public sentiment has shifted enough. So obviously across a, you know, a range of different issues that doesn't happen, but I feel like Albo did kind of, as you mentioned, he got a little bit of an easy run leading into that.
Well, he didn't really. Like, he still got fucking jumped on, like, far more than St. Morrison would have, because also I guess maybe it's not a coordinated Murdoch attack, but that gotcha stuff that came up in that last election.
The cash rate and unemployment rate stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff was just these young journos, I guess, because they're not getting paid much anymore. No, they're not really. And it's hard to build profile. So they're kind of going for a little bit of a TikTok thing.
They are, yeah.
And leadership around them is getting sacked. Like, newsrooms are emptying out. So they don't have kind of mentors going, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Why don't we dig deeper and work on a story rather than just ask for that sound?
They were running feral. Like, they were going wild there trying to catch me.
It was nuts, yeah. And I just remember as well, like, I would often put side to sides of things that were covered when Tony Abbott was running as an opposition leader versus Albanese, but also things in, like, COVID as well. Like, the perfect example was when Sydney went into lockdown versus when Melbourne went into lockdown.
Yeah.
And you could always bring this stuff up in the election, but it was like identical things put forward by people from opposite political parties being praised by the same media organisation if it came from the blue half and then absolutely panned from the red half. And it's like, hang on, but these are the same things. And no one cares about yesterday's newspaper, but thanks to social media, for all the problems it has, screenshots live forever. Memes live forever. So you can always bring this stuff back up nowadays and really bring it up and be like, hang on a second, they ran this as a positive thing when the Liberal Party was in office. So,
and you have a bit of a running theory too, don't you, that the media calls Liberals the government when they're in power. When Labor's in government, they're just Labor.
It's just Labor for now.
Yeah, so you've got the government and Labor. Labor's always like, they're temporary. They're kind of there for a little bit until the government comes back. It's not always something that kind of is said, but like early on in Albanese's tenure as Prime Minister, I did notice that. Like, they'd be like, Labor has initiated this, and then Prime Minister Albanese. And then it was like with Morrison's government, it was the government. So it's kind of seen as like Labor's almost like this rogue faction that's kind of there to fuck shit up.
I guess these parties become more favorable to, I wouldn't say the media, because that, you know, that's a bit kind of tinfoil hatty, but to like the media class or the, you know, the political class, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A political party becomes more valuable to the political class if there's thinner talent.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, you know what I mean? Like, Labor right now is pretty stacked. You can name four or five people that could fill in for Prime Minister.
100%.
You know, whether it's O'Neill, you or know. Miles some, even. Yeah, Miles. Like, they speak well, they're young enough, they're la, la, la. You get an opposition like the one we have where it's like old, like senior citizens, mostly men and like no one. Like, who would be next cab off the rank after Dutton?
Yeah, I literally look at like the Nationals front bench and it's like, I've seen you at an RSL.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I have seen you at like the Hampton RSL.
Yeah, you're too old for this and you obviously drink too much. But
it's like, you still call
you
the
do, you do wonder if Labor get another term or two and then they start getting comfortable enough that these significant figures start making the fuck ups that people do when they get comfortable. Like, a lot of those scandals for the Libs and the Nats tended to come towards the end of their run where they were just like, fuck it, I'll put $500 million in these car parks, whatever.
Labor are the greatest at getting comfortable and becoming corrupt.
Yeah.
Like, there's no one really better than, I guess, Dan Andrews had been there in power long enough for people to expect that to be happening, because when you look at the Bob Carr. And, you know, even some of those Queensland Labor, I mean, some of those Queensland dictatorships of any variety end up with people just becoming so chummy and comfortable.
Or like Neville Ran as well in New South Wales. Yeah. Like, that's the one I always think of, because like ICAC was made for like, what's his name? I can't remember that one that went to prison. But
Obeid.
Eddie Obeid. Yeah, like that was such a brazenly like broken party. Yeah. And you look at what happened after that when O'Farrell took over. Like, O'Farrell got done, and then Mike Baird got done, then Gladys got done, and only now have they managed to just scrape in.
Yeah.
They've only just gotten in by the slimmest of margins because of how much damage to the reputation had happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Speaking of state parties,
yeah.
Give us a little bit of a feeling. I feel like we haven't heard heaps from down here now that your dictator's gone, that it's crumbled. We have a new regime in charge.
Yeah, well, the dictator's decided to voluntarily stand down and have a democratic by-election.
Very
so,
dictatorial of him, yeah. Now,
because he slipped down the stairs at Lindsay Fox's house.
Oh, boy.
Bender at Lindsay Fox's.
Yeah.
Now, what's happening with Jacinda? I feel like I haven't seen too much other than like duck hunting being a thing. Are we talking culture wars stuff on duck hunting?
Well, the duck hunting Brumbies. Well, essentially, Daniel Andrews wanted to, before he left, was significantly curtail the duck hunting season here because a lot of native ducks get affected. So there were a lot of like European introduced ones, which were introduced for sport hunting. But the problem is a lot of endangered duck species were being shot as well. A lot. It's getting to the point where it's like, it's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the problem is the Allan government's gone with very little changes to the duck hunting season now. But besides that, there's been a couple of things here and there that have been introduced. There's been a Minister for Young People, which has been a cabinet position, which has been introduced, especially covering like a mental health portfolio, which I think is really good. But the thing is, they've kind of benefited from having such a shit Liberal National Coalition in Victoria that they kind of haven't really done anything. Level crossings are kind of, you know, they're getting knocked out and everything, which is a big thing here because all of our trains, like, they're all above ground. Unlike Sydney or anything, so it's a bit of a problem. But really, besides that, there's been some stuff. It's basically continuing the mandate of Daniel Andrews, but in a quieter way.
Yeah, right. She's from Bendigo.
Yeah, she is from Bendigo.
So how did she get inside from the little metropolis of Bendigo outside of Melbourne?
Well, I'm not sure, I guess, what her background is, but I think it's quite, you know, it's good to have a regional, at least someone from a regional hub coming into, you know, a real position of influence because we only really had metropolitan leaders, at least for the last little while, especially if we've had Liberal people here. They're all from like, you know, your Malverns, your Glen Iris, your Brighton, your Sandringham, like those really wealthy areas in the east and southeast of Melbourne. So to have someone from a regional area, which has always been a very working class area in Bendigo, that place is not getting gentrified anytime soon.
Well, it was after the gold rush ended, right? It's been standing on its own 2 feet since then.
It kind of has,
It's too big to get gentrified. But that explains, I guess, her position on things like duck hunting and stuff where she's just kinda, you know, she's got regional constituents that she has to think about.
Exactly
And she has to walk down the street and deal with those people if she wants to make decisions that are going to
happen. Think of Daniel Andrews, who lives basically in Springvale. You know, that is not an area where you'd be duck hunting at all. And, you know, their environment shapes them.
The guy with that short king that's... the Liberal leader.
Oh, John Pesutto.
Like, he seems like a nice enough guy, or is he fucked in the head? Like, is he one of those conspiracist Liberals that they have in Victoria?
Well, the thing
you're
is-
You're asking the wrong guy I
thought that Labor was going to be absolutely, like, in trouble because he's moderate, and I saw Gladys, and I was like, it's going to be the same thing, darling of the media. But then the whole thing with Moira Deeming and all those nutters in the Liberal Party kind of took over because the Liberal Party in Victoria is absolutely stacked with Mormons. They are stacked with Mormons. Like, that's at least that's the word going around. Don't ask. I don't know why. But that's at least what
I'm asking.
Sorry, the Liberal Party of Victoria is stacked with Mormons.
Well, that's the rumor going around, at least, from what I remember ages ago. There were a couple of articles going around about branch stacking in the Mormons and the Presbyterians.
I mean, they're around. They're definitely around. They're still, you know, it's a faith-based community.
They tried a couple of times to stack the Liberal Party, but a lot of Christians have. So, for legal reasons, please don't sue me.
You are anonymous, by the way.
Yeah, exactly right.
To let you know.
Yeah, there was that thing. There were like articles going around saying that they were. Then there was the Presbyterians and the Protestants that were trying to get in. But basically, the Liberal Party here is so heavily influenced by religious groups that people like John Pesutto can't really get a foothold.
Right.
He kind of wants to make them better. And to his credit, you know, he's actually trying to get Moira Deeming and those people out of the party, but he just can't. It's not happening.
Really? The religious, I mean.
And in a place like Victoria, like in Melbourne, like, can you imagine going to Fitzroy and talking about conversion therapy being a good thing? No.
Like, well, you're not going to win a lot of the city with that kind of stuff. But this is my theory as well, where the Liberals are killing themselves in the sense that, sure, they want to appeal to faith-based communities. In Australia in 2024, that means you actually can't have a white man doing that, you know what I mean? Like, look at all the pastors and preachers and whatever. They're not really, they don't look like Tony Abbott anymore.
Nah, they're all from overseas. Yeah, they're all from, like, and you look at a lot of Christians and a lot of Catholics, like, they all come from non-European areas.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you can't be so bigoted and try to appeal to these faith-based communities because at the end of the day, they are who they are and they can't change that.
It was really interesting seeing that bloke that Morrison shafted for the pre-selection in Cook.
Yeah, that's
Michael Toke.
Yeah.
You know, we look at what Dutton's plan now is federally, which is to appeal to these communities, that mortgage belt, immigrant, working class, religious people. He's not the man to do that. He's just spent 10 years as immigration and home affairs minister. Like, these people know who he is, and they don't like him because he's made them, or at least their family members, suffer. This is the type of job, if that's the approach you want to get, like if that's the approach you want to make, if you reckon there's a strategy in winning an election and in appealing to that particular demographic, you need someone like Michael Tove, who's, you know, a Lebanese Thatcherite.
Yeah, exactly.
Christian.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, not even those guys, not even the Lebanese Catholics can get into the Liberal Party pre-selection anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But nowadays. Well, at least they couldn't in 2007. Yeah. Like, that's, you know, that's them killing themselves a little bit when they're not casting a wider net and they're not being more representative of... It's not so much diversity, it's more representative.
Like, yeah, just the fact that there are even people there acknowledge them.
Yeah.
Like, it is as basic as that now. Yeah. We're not even looking at, like, representation. We're looking at acknowledgement.
Yeah, yeah.
More than anything, because it's like they're so far back now. And you think of the seats that the Liberal Party holds in Melbourne nowadays. Yeah. They don't hold, I believe, even, like, a single seat that you would consider to be a working class area.
Right.
It's all like Sandringham, Brighton, it's Malvern, it's like those sorts of areas. Right. It's Kew. These are not areas that you would associate with the proletarian of Melbourne.
No.
Like, they're all areas that have always been the sort of very white, very wealthy areas. And, you know, you're never going to get those sorts of people there. They're not going to be in touch with them.
Yeah. I do find it quite interesting, this existential crisis. It seems much more visible in Melbourne.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And you look at some of the polls, like Liberal Party's had a bit of a jump lately, I guess because Dan's no longer here and it's been, you know, a long time now, or it's been a bit longer since he's quit. But basically the Greens are, you know, consistently polling ahead of the Liberal Party, at least amongst, you know, people under 35.
Mm.
There have been several polls where they've been leading. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, where does the Liberal Party go forward? If there is an answer, if there's a way into office, it's not the way they're doing it right now.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. Like, trying to appeal to these new voters, which with their current talent pool of MPs is not happening.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting time. But I want to ask you guys at Toilet Paper Australia, what would you say your biggest kind of moment has been? What was the most important thing you got out, and one thing that a lot of people saw that was important for them to see?
A couple of things come to mind. One of them was a couple of posts we ran kind of in collaboration with the Virtuous Victorian, who hasn't really been active very much. He was a young fella, but basically there was some stuff about the Liberal Party trying to, in Victoria, play around with the gay conversion therapy ban, and I guess maybe, I don't know if it was loosening it or not. I don't want to, of course, say anything that would put itself into hot water. But basically, it came to light that they'd met with the Australian Christian Lobby, or at least that was the word going around. It was published in The Age. And we ran a couple of posts about it. And it got the attention of basically David Southwick, Matthew Guy, I believe Milhouse, Michael O'Brien. That's a name that's another one we'll get to in a bit. But
Milhouse.
I mean, look at that man and don't tell me it doesn't look like the guy from The Simpsons. But we ended up putting out a whole bunch of articles and they're saying, oh, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do this. Okay. Well, if you're worth your salt, say you're not going to do it. They ran articles in The Age and they ran everything in The Age saying they had this ironclad promise to not wind back the gay conversion therapy laws. A few months later, there was an argument over Zoom because it was in the middle of lockdowns about this. And they were saying, we made a promise to these groups saying that we would, you know, maybe fiddle around with these laws. And it ended up in an argument with Tim Smith and I think Peter Walsh, the leader of the National Party, going, and he yelled at literally, I can read, you fuckwit. Now read the document. Like, they're fully arguing and we're just thinking, what have we done here? Have
really?
We just caused a split in the Liberal Party?
So, well, the Nationals obviously aren't as keen for gay conversion therapy.
Oh, well, I mean, they're not exactly the nicest. Oh, at least in my opinion, I don't think they're exactly the nicest towards those sorts of groups. But then, in a more lighthearted one, Milhouse. So Michael O'Brien, right, he was the leader of the Liberal Party after Matthew Guy lost in 2018.
But they've kind of swapped back and forth those guys a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they have.
Did it go Guy, O'Brien, Guy?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And then O'Brien, I looked at him and I'm like, man, that guy looks like Milhouse, doesn't he? Even when he has glasses off, he looks like, you know, he kind of looked like Milhouse with like the small, like little beady eyes. I remember I posted, just as a joke, I was like, hey, Tim Smith, I may not be a politician, but at least I don't have to work for a real life Milhouse.
Mm.
And that name just stuck. And every single time people like would post on his stuff being like, you don't know anything, Milhouse, or shut up, Milhouse. He stumbled over his words and he stammered and everything. And he was a bit bumbly on press conferences. There was one particular one during the Coates inquiry into the hotel quarantine stuff.
Yeah.
And he tried to do a soundbite so many times.
I think he had to redo it four times. And like, if that's not Milhouse, I don't know what is. So now people, I know, like from what I've heard from people in Victorian Parliament on Spring Street, they call him Milhouse.
Oh, really?
It's stuck.
You've created
in the back rooms, they call him Milhouse. And it's the funniest thing, and it will never not be funny.
A permanent nickname.
Talk us through the decision to get into the world of podcasting. You guys have just launched Talking Shit with Toilet Paper Australia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did that come about?
It kind of came through a mutual connection of admin ones. Got a nice little recommendation with Dear Media. Beautiful people there that want to take on this. I guess from then we kind of spoke a little bit about where we see it going.
Yeah.
Talking about the stuff that, you know, this is nonsense in the media. Starting to call shit out. You were quick with the name Talking Shit. I think it
kind of stood out to me. Yeah. It worked well thematically. So, yeah.
It did. But we thought that, you know, there was a lot of shitposts coming out. I love to coin that term, but there was a lot we couldn't cover. There were, you know, you were doing your tweets and stuff and sharing stories and even like covering things like Advance. Something that's it's a big, you know, it's a lobby group that's got some massive influence here.
Mm.
Going after the Liberal Party, supporting the Liberal Party unofficially, but, you know, we're very limited in what we could talk about. So the podcast has naturally just grew and now we're having guests and stuff and
it's wild.
It's pretty weird. Yeah.
Because it's good. We can bring people in, you know, we can bring a message in from different perspectives and we can bring new people in to just kind of like, you know, hear what they've got to say, hear how we've got an overlap. And we kind of, you know, everyone has a bit of a stake in the way stories are told in the media, whether it be through their own things, whether it's like, so we had Punter's Politics on, so he's big on political integrity. And we were talking about how the media covers political integrity or Max Chandler Mather, housing. We talk about the narrative around housing. Mm. It's kind of just, we've all got an overlap in this. Everyone's informed by the press. Everyone's informed by the media, whether we like it or not. And we just want to, we just want to see better. So
at the end of the day, we're two guys, neither of us are politicians, no political ties. But we're impacted by everything.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
So
right.
That's where it's been key. And I think with the format of the episode too, it's been good. We've been able to do calling out nonsense in the media, wiping it free of culture wars.
Yeah, dig deeper and have conversations about stuff and taking a bit of time to process it.
You know what I find interesting is to talk to someone maybe two generations up, maybe someone even older than the boomers. Because I dare say what we view now as progressive is always changing. You know, it's always changed. Once upon a time, Malcolm Fraser was bringing in the refugees. You know what I mean? There's a different what is left and right changes. And part of me thinks that there was this Labor era where it was like Alan Jones was keeping Labor in power. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly right.
Has it happened like that before? And it'd be interesting to hear if someone from that generation explain just how, you know, stifled, I suppose, the Liberal or the coalition was.
When
Bob Hawke was cooking with gas, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you had
exactly.
Hawke and all these different populist and popular Labor leaders, and then you had these kind of Hewsons and
Labor
Cream
leaders who were doing things like selling public assets, deregulating
Keating,
the financial market, cracking down on unions.
I talked to my dad and he was like, there was always this joke going around that the best Liberal Prime Minister we've ever had was Paul Keating because of the amount of public assets that were being sold off. But then again, you look at like, you know, the way that he was like so quick with words. Like my favorite one is just the I want to do you slowly.
Yeah.
That will never not like, and my dad loves all tip, no iceberg. Like, you know, it's just a really fun, like, you know, interesting thing. Like, you know, talking about how politics has changed. Mm. It's, I think, you know, someone from, like you said, two, three generations up wouldn't recognize the landscape that we've got now.
No.
Like it's kind
of like. Or just there being a protection racket for the Liberals. I feel like it could have been the other way around, you know, two generations ago. When Labor were doing the bidding. But again, like who votes for who changes? And
exactly.
Right now, we're talking about these existential crises. It's basically this whole chat we've had. But the Liberals in Victoria seem like they've taken it back to the 1800s where they've got like the Mennonites and the Mormons and the, you know, like it's...
Well, it's so completely unrecognizable in terms of progress. It's like feeding an medieval peasant a hot Dorito. Like it's one of those things where it's just like... They wouldn't be able to recognize the level of discussion that we've had or like how, in a way, how unpolished it is.
So who else are you, looking at talking to or who else, who else have you spoken with?
Yeah, well, we've got a few people that we hopefully want to, you know, speak to, a few MPs we've got in the pipeline as well. And we're really, really keen to, you know, bring more people in. We're trying to sort of work with, I know Purple Pingers is someone that we're really keen to get on. Honestly, like if
Purple
we can get someone.
Purple Pingers, hasn't he caused a bit of trouble?
He's, I love the chaos. I love the chaos of it. Whether or not you agree or disagree with it.
No. Yeah.
Whenever I see a video, I'm like.
He's forcing everyone's hand, which is great.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter, like, you know, whether you agree or disagree with him. I think it's just the fact that we're talking about this now is a good thing. Yeah, so and we're hoping to have Georgie Purcell on, especially after the gaffe from Nine News, where, you know, they did some pretty dodgy Photoshop jobs without consent. Yeah. Oh, that was mental. Yeah.
What about Richo? That'd be a good one, hearing you guys talk to an old fixer. Graham Richardson. Mm. That'd be
That would be really interesting, actually. Yeah, it's very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, but
Not Richo from the West Tigers, who we
No. That's
Shane Richardson.
I mean, you could talk to him, I guess, about how they do things in the World Rugby League.
about stacking.
Well, even Punters Politics recommended getting Pocock on for a chat too. Yeah, so I mean, what's good is we're pretty open to anyone.
Yeah, cool.
I'm pretty sure we can.
Well, we'll do the call out now to Poey. We know he listens into this podcast. You've got to come along and tell the world how you keep the bastards honest down there in Canberra as an independent senator for the ACT.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I want to know how much he benches as well, Pocock. But
it'd be so fucking much.
Oh, honestly, yeah.
It would be so much. It would be more than most weightlifting dudes bench.
Oh, 100%. You know? Yeah.
Oh, I always see the photos of him in like the parliamentary soccer games and touch footy games, and you just hope he doesn't slip on the wet Canberra grass, because if you make contact with someone, you feel like it might be just all over for a Matt Canavan or whatever.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. You see him rock up, and like everyone else is kind of in their blazers and everything, but he rocks up and like he's bursting out of his shirt. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, mate. He's so out of place. but like you hear him talking, like, you are the most gentle person I've met.
Mm.
Yeah. He's so well spoken too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's
incredibly authentic.
Yeah.
It's like there are 1,000 people walking these walls of Parliament.
Yeah.
We have no idea who they are.
Like, yeah, that's an interesting thing though, isn't it? That talking about who gets let into Parliament.
Blew my mind when I heard it.
Yeah.
This is just like, and I think
2,000 or something.
Yeah, and I think this is what's such a nice callback to the pod is because like I had no avenue before this of hearing things like that.
Yeah, right.
And then it's kind of this decentralized media, this online social content where you can actually get, I think people are comfortable sharing things around now.
Mm.
They weren't for a while there, but it's a video like that from Punters Politics and Pocock that says, hey, there's people walking the walls of Parliament.
Yeah.
They're just allowed in. And then we have to say, well, how do you get that access? And it's like, okay, whose hands were you shaking with donations?
Yeah.
You know, to big Parliament.
Hmm. Something plenty of people wouldn't have thought about unless something like that comes along.
Exactly. Well, it's a prompting thought.
Yeah. We've been down there to Canberra a few times. We launched a book inside Parliament House. And it was fucking hard to get in. Like, we had a book launch booked in the courtyard, and we had to get David Little Proud to get something. As a la, 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 la. So I don't know how these lobbyists get that kind of access. And, you know, the real question is there too much work? I mean, I don't want to sympathize with politicians too much, but for a senator, right, Jackie Lambie said this many times. She's like, I can't be expected to read all this legislation. I don't have enough people working for me. There's like a lot of shit I got to vote on.
Yeah.
Mm.
And they drown it in jargon that you just cannot understand unless you're up with.
Unless you've written it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so much of that shit, like, that's what I think Pocock's getting at, and I'd like to hear more from him on your podcast, is a lot of this legislation drafted up by lobbyists. Does that just get put on the desk in front of them and they go, well, it's all done for you, mate?
Yeah, it's like, well, I've just been given this thing by BHP or something like that. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things is just people get absolutely drowned and as a result they become they just don't care, which is completely understandable. Who wants to read through like a, you know, 148-page dossier or like, you know, a 200-page bill?
Genuinely, but I'm putting that through ChatGPT, like summarize this in 3 paragraphs.
But yeah, at the end, or explain in Fortnite terms. basically, you know, I think the thing about, you know, doing podcasts like this and people nowadays is like, we're not from politics. We're like, we wanted cheaper healthcare. It's not happening. Why? Yeah. It's just good to cut all the jargon out, cut the technical details out. We just kind of want to know why it's happening and why things are happening the way they are, in a way that the average person can understand.
And like another point of view is it's actually really funny. Once you get into the Parliament side, there's so many things.
Bob Catter is a walking meme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That man.
Tough. There's always the
headlines that you run with Bob Catter always crack me up. Like just the tangents that you go on. Like every time I see them, I message my mates. I'm like, fuck, this is good.
It's not too far off. We posted a photo of Catter getting onto a plane, being like, oh, you know, imagine having to sit next to Catter from Townsville to Brisbane. And everyone in North Queensland's had to do it at some point. Like, that's what we've learned from the feedback, is everyone's done it. He just doesn't stop talking the whole flight. You can do Townsville to Canberra. Bob just...
But in a way, he's the most accessible politician that anyone has, right?
Well, you know, that's what you got to do if you want to be a local member. You got to catch an economy flight.
Let's prep one question for him if we have him on. One singular question.
Gotta let them blossoms bloom.
Yeah, exactly right. Blossoms aren't going to bloom themselves.
Well, thanks for joining us, guys, and all the best with what you've done. I think it's a really interesting thing. There's a void out there. It's, you know, there's an audience that wants to learn these things, as you said, you know, and it's an insider-outsider game, Australian politics, where a lot of people are expected to just not think about it until the day before an election. Just lastly, do you think this is, like, your interest and your going down this path, coming out of health, you know, is that a result of the pandemic has kind of radicalized you? Is that what's radicalized you?
I've always been interested in it. I mean, I got super into it after the 2019 election.
Yeah, right.
Because I was like, oh, fuck.
How good's Australia?
Yeah. Oh, God. I still have PTSD from that night. But then I think the pandemic, you're right, definitely brought it to a new level. And it got me involved in a way that, like, now, not only can I not get out, but I don't want to get out. I actually love this. Yeah. Like, it's good. Mm. Yeah. And I'm not having any other way.
At the end of it, I think we feel like there could be some influence in there for us. Yeah. You know, we can definitely make at least someone think twice about what they're going to do. Yep. We just did an episode on preferential voting and how that works and
stuff like that.
So
that's a really interesting one to kind of, a lot of people don't really get it. Like, they're sitting at home going, look at the preferences. It's like people don't really understand.
I'll go a Liberal in second. They don't get my vote anyway. It's like, oh, well, actually they do.
Because
you're through an independent in one. So that kind of stuff that, you know, if everyone just elevated their level of political knowledge from like 0% to even 40, who knows where we'd be? So we're hoping to do some of that and make it sometimes funny.
Yeah.
Well, good work, guys. We've really enjoying your show so far and we've been enjoying talking to you today in Melbourne.
Yeah, looking forward to the journey. Well done.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks, boys. Thanks.